Hi everyone. You're about to hear a real-life horror story, and I want to guide you through it as safely as I can. I believe I have a responsibility beyond giving you a trigger warning, because many of you listening now will know the isolation of abuse and don't know where to turn. I want to give you a starting point that's free and accessible, a safe place for help, education and empowerment to join a global community of survivors. It's called STAR Network, which stands for Survivors of Toxic Abusive Relationships. And whether you've been in an abusive relationship, toxic workplace, or high conflict family, whatever it is, you can access a lifeline. You can sign up for daily TAR Anon meetings from your phone, that stands for Toxic Abusive Relationship Anonymous, and join this virtual trauma network and heal in connection. And if you want, you can share your story with others and feel heard. I'll put the details in the show notes as well, but it's starnetwork.org. STAR Network is a non-profit set up to give you the strength to break free, and it's an honour to have them as this episode sponsor. If you don't break the trauma will break you. More than a year ago, I was asked to make contact with a very dangerous man.
Because we can't get to him anymore. The idea we have is, what if you can get to him? Mm-hmm. What if, because of who you are, he'll talk to you?
He wears a charming mask, but beneath it, he's a monster.
One of the most cruel person I have ever known, in documentaries, in movies, in books. I mean, what he does is so cruel.
I had to play him at his own game so I could sit down with him face to face and confront him.
There's so much riding on this, there's so much pressure on me. The one little person that's going to go and face this big, horrible, evil giant.
But not before he told me how and why he does what he does.
The exposure to a narcissist is annihilating. A narcissist dehumanizes you and objectifies you because he wants you to die.
This is the story of a narcissist, but also one of survival. And throughout this journey, you'll learn everything there is to know about this kind of predator, from the world's leading experts, victims, and from the horse's mouth. This is The Storyteller, The Narcissist Playbook, written, produced, and edited by me, Isla Traquair. What you're about to hear is producers Scott Altamori and Mark Vicente asking me to try and get in front of Sam Vaknin. Now, full disclosure, the audio was recorded during the filming of the documentary, but it replicates what they asked me over the phone. The discussion about our approach is genuine.
So, we can't actually finish this film without getting this piece.
Okay.
It's unresolved. We need it.
Yeah.
He refuses to give us a proper interview. Mm-hmm. Talk to us, he'll correspond via text messaging, but he won't go on camera.
So you put the allegations to him, but he'll just write back and not, yeah.
Actually, that's not true, because we didn't put all the allegations to him. Okay. We put a few things to him and realized we didn't want to tip our hand, because if we told him exactly all the allegations,
understand,
then he would, you know, he would be clued into it and not talk to anybody. Yeah. So he can't leave his home country.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly why, but he refuses to fly to all these other areas that he used to fly to before. Uh-huh. So we figured that maybe he's on lockdown for some reason, or he can't leave the country. If he leaves the country, something could happen to him.
So I'm going to have to find a good reason to, you know, go there. But, you know, as a, maybe a way of gaining trust is I could legitimately interview him for one of my other projects. I've got a podcast right now, actually, which would be perfect.
Yeah.
But my concern is that, like, I come from nowhere and I think I need to build trust over a period of time before I go in.
Well, yeah, I think what you need to do is you need to contact him early.
Yeah.
And talk to him about, you know, your podcast, why you want to talk to him, and build that trust over time.
Mm.
And then ask for that interview.
Yeah.
And our ask is basically, would you be willing to go to him, you know, get that interview, and confront him with the allegations?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. He doesn't scare me. It's more the what's going to happen afterwards, and I know that the, you know, the revenge smear is going to be fast.
Yes, it will be fast. I think the thing that we predict will happen is that he will have a tantrum.
Yeah.
So with us, he had a cry. I think that if you agree to do this, what's going to happen is he's going to have a rage tantrum.
Mm.
That he's not going to physically be harmful, we don't believe.
Yeah.
But he's going to get enraged and start screaming.
But we have security there for when you're...
No,
When we're shooting, when we're shooting.
I'm fine with that. I don't mind a rage. It's always just a little bit unsettling to the nervous system when that happens, but I think I'm going to be so fired up with adrenaline if he agrees to do it, that is, that, you know... But I'm willing to do this because for me it's important to do it on behalf of the victims, and he needs to be stopped, and I'm happy to do that.
Basically, these women are giving him complete amount of trust.
Mm.
To delve into their, you know, their psyches, and he's doing terrible things to them.
Mm.
So I don't feel bad about exposing him at all.
No, I don't mind.
He might start actually doing some of the things that he does. Just be careful, keep your guard up, because
I'm going in with my eyes wide open. I mean, I'm a bit wary. I mean, I've confronted people head on many a time, and this is who I am, and I'm accusing you of this, but this is a little bit different because I have to. I'm going in as a nice guy, and then it's me whose mask's going to drop, so...
Well, the thing is that the kind of woman he goes for, I mean, I think you actually fit that, what he likes.
Mm-hmm.
So, might as well just use that.
Yeah.
One of the issues we're seeing is that we can't tell anybody, we can't tell any of the victims what you're about to do, because we think one or more of them might even be trauma bonded to him. They might still be in touch with him. They might tell him.
Yeah.
So we have to keep it super silent.
Yeah, if they're entangled, we cannot risk it.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of having to do it backwards, but I think it's the only way we can do this safely, you know?
In early 2024, I reached out to Sam via social media and asked if I could interview him about a murder case over a video call. His initial response was a little frosty. He refused to learn anything about the case or comment directly on it, but agreed to be interviewed about personality disorders and homicide in general.
Right. So we'll get started. So it's a real delight to welcome Professor Sam Vaknin, who is author of Malignant Self-Love, Narcissism Revisited. I'm going to let you say more about your vast career and all your various expertise.
Well, I've been studying narcissists and psychopaths and borderlines for well over 30 years. I revived the topic of narcissism starting in the late 1980s. So I'm the grandfather of the field, in a way. The field of narcissistic abuse, I mean, in a way. I coined most of the language in use today, including narcissistic abuse, somatic narcissists, cerebral narcissists, you name it. Hoovering, ghosting, I mean, all these... So I coined most of this language, and I've written about a dozen books on the topic. I'm a professor of psychology in several institutions and so on and so forth. And so this is my background.
It was a great interview. There's no denying his expertise, which made it easier for me to legitimately say I'd want to interview him again, and possibly develop more projects. Then there was a huge gap in between, because full disclosure, money needed to be raised for the film to pay for me and a cameraman to fly out. In October, Mark said they had the finances to finish the film, and I reached out to Sam and asked if he was still up for being interviewed. He was. I think the many months in between actually cemented my legitimacy. But before I could do the interview, I needed to see some of the evidence and learn details of his crimes. So Mark sent me 9 hours of interviews with just one of the victims he'd abused over a 7-year period.
In 2015, I was having a very difficult life crisis. I was in very bad mental shape. I lost all orientation in life. I had very complicated personal issues, and I reached out to a therapist, a psychologist, for help. I wanted a couple of sessions to have an advice, to have an insight on my situation, because he's a very famous psychologist, very famous therapist and expert. So I wanted his insights. Once I reached out, I was said from the very first session that I'm very, very sick, that I need to be healed. And if my aim is to heal, I would need to have a therapy, long-term therapy, because my problems are really, really, really bad. I went only to have therapy. I wanted nothing else. I couldn't imagine a human being could be as cruel.
These are just snippets to give you a flavour of what she went through. The worst was what Sam calls cold therapy, or Disneyland, during which he'd sexually assault his patients and coerce them into degrading sexual acts. If they didn't cooperate, there'd be consequences. And eventually, once he was done with them, he'd encourage them to commit suicide.
Would immediately, after some kind of his Disneyland, I would immediately run to the toilet. I would cry. I would go to the shower. In some cases, I would throw up. The disgust was utter. If I would refuse, and I would refuse quite a few things, I would say, he would give me hell. He would be verbally extremely abusive. He would tell me that I'm not a woman enough, and he's not sure if he can heal me or not at all. He was killing me slice by slice. Everything he had ever learned from me, everything I had confessed him, he used against me. He used against me to totally destroy me. And then I told him, stop it, I can't anymore, just go away. He said, be careful what you wish for. Because once I'm gone, the only way out for you is to step off the window. It's okay, you have 20th floor, you won't even feel anything. But there is no another Sam Bucknin to save you. And this one is gone, your only option is suicide.
You'll hear from her later in the series, but her grooming was complex and over a long period of time. He misdiagnosed her, brainwashed her, sexually coerced her, verbally and physically abused her, extorted money, and suggested she should kill herself. I was also sent hundreds of emails and text exchanges and graphic photos. The victims couldn't know anything about me or my mission. Two reasons. We couldn't risk anyone telling him. And secondly, I would find it harder to confront him if I'd formed a connection with a victim. It's impossible to hear someone's story of the worst thing that's happened to them in their life and not be affected by it. It was bad enough just listening to the interview that Mark had carried out. Thankfully, there was a gap of several weeks between me listening to the horrific details of abuse and the interview with Sam. I recorded this late at night in my home, just after I'd finished listening to the evidence, so you can hear my real-time reaction.
I have had the misfortune and unusual life of being witness to and seeing the aftermath of crime, murder, and the full stories coming out in court. And I've had to listen to some fairly horrific things, rape, murder. There's one case where a mother who was schizophrenic, she killed her own children, like just the worst things, a baby death, abuse of, you know, very small children. Horrendous things. But I've just listened to the full account of, wow, 7 years of a woman's life and what happened to her. And I'm going to use the word subtle because it's so insidious, the grooming. It's the words, it's the brainwashing, it's the mind control, it's the absolute annihilation of someone. Someone who is sharing their deepest, most vulnerable issues with someone who's supposed to help them. And all he is doing is loading up. This is ammunition in an arsenal for what will be used to destroy them. And even though I'm such an open, I'm not a normal person because of my job, and I have a great understanding. Some people listening might be like, well, why did you not just cut him off? Don't send him any more money. Don't communicate. It doesn't work like that. When someone is controlling you, it's an addiction. You become addicted to them. And I was listening to so much. I slammed through in 2 days and I did not sleep well. And I'm like, oh, I hope there's no such thing as passive brainwashing, because I've heard so many things repeated. It's deeply disturbing, because there's so much blame. The thing I keep hearing over and over again, no, but it was my fault, but I was responsible, but I, no. I'm going to steal the words from Good Will Hunting, you know, it is not your fault. It is not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not their fault. But I can feel it. I can feel their shame and blame. And it's you can't be exposed to this stuff. You can't listen to this stuff. You can't hear these people's stories, even though it can be delivered incredibly matter-of-factly, because they've repeated it before, and they're, you know, sort of out the other end, but it's really difficult. Really difficult to, you know, years of someone's life that's been stolen, but the erosion of who they are, which they will never fully get back. They will be, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but the scar tissue is there. They will never be the same again.
Next, I had to go through the documentation and digital evidence, including voice recordings and photos. The majority of it is in black and white, communication directly from his phone and email to his patients. Let's remember, these are patients, not romantic partners. Consent cannot be given when you've been brainwashed, when someone is abusing power, when you're being blackmailed or threatened. So bear this in mind when you hear me go through the communications. I recorded myself as I read this evidence for the first time, and a warning, some of it is deeply disturbing. You'll be glad that I do not describe the photographs, but they are of Sam, and they are explicit.
So I have just been sent the 195 pages of some of the communication that's been downloaded, and I've been warned, and I have heard accounts of some of this, but I'm about to dive in and read some of this, and I'm kind of scared of what I'm about to see. So yeah, okay, where do we start?
The first slot I go through are love bombing messages. There are some bizarre offers to become the patient's father. These are hugely inappropriate, but this is already at the stage where the victim is brainwashed.
This is to one of his victims. For the first time in 30 years, I found in you a good and close friend. So you are special. In 30 years, you are the person. And he's starting off, I'm here to protect you. I'm here to make you happy. I am the person in your life that's going to help fix you. I know already you have a father, but I also think of you as my daughter, as the daughter I never had and would have liked to have had. Your endearing childlike curiosity, your generous heart, your infectious vivaciousness and energy. I would have been proud to have you as my child. Who's not going to be flattered by that? Both as a friend and as my newfound daughter, I never want you out of my life. I want to spend with you as much time as you need and I can. I want to tell you stories and soothe your pains and your anxieties and guide you in this world, as fathers and good friends do and should.
This email is during the grooming. It's long and he explains that his wife, Lydia, is essential for his survival. His wife is used in the grooming with all his patients.
So here we are. This is me and my world. Will you be my friend? Will you allow me to be your second father? Because if you will, it will make me a happy and proud man with Lydia and you by my side as my family. I feel a new sense of purpose, a reawakening, a rebirth. This is very common for the Messiah complex for multiple wives, multiple women. Thank you for being there for me, and even more, thank you for merely being. Yours with deepest affection. Okay, so I knew about this communication.
I'm going to interrupt for a moment. Mark described a recurring father-daughter rape scenario that Sam would create with his patients. This email was entitled Adoption Papers, and it was sent a year into therapy, I'm going to call it grooming, with this patient. You'll hear the full context and her reaction later, but I want to play you a segment from one of the live audience seminars in which Sam openly offers therapy. He says this just after explaining how he chooses his victims, introduced by his business partner at the time, Richard Grannan. He had no idea what Sam was really doing. This was recorded in Prague. The victim I've been referring to was suicidal at this time and being encouraged to jump out of her 20th floor apartment.
I know that the women in the room are waiting with bated breath for you to say how you select your victims.
No. Well, first of all, I don't regard them as victims. I regard it as a privilege to be with me. I elevate them to my level. I improve them. It reminds me of the Jewish joke. When the first edition of Shakespeare was published in the shtetl, so it was titled William Shakespeare in Yiddish, which is a Jewish language. William Shakespeare translated and improved. So it's the same, you know, victims elevated and improved. So that sounds like a joke, but I think it's the key to understanding the dynamic. First of all, how does a narcissist home in on a potential partner? How do I decide that someone is a potential partner? Well, she bleeds. I'm a shark, I'm a predator. One would never attribute evil to a shark. You don't say, this shark is evil. He could have unsharked himself, and yet he chose to be a shark. Sharks don't choose to be sharks. And the narcissist doesn't have a choice, never mind what you've heard, but to be a narcissist. Narcissism is an all-pervasive disorder. The narcissist's personality had been supplanted, had been replaced by another construct, which takes over completely. The narcissist, in many senses, is possessed. You could think of him, in religious terms, as possessed. So, the first thing this group, yeah? So I would scan the group. I'm using something called empathy. Cold empathy is another phrase I coined. It's empathy which is cognitive and reflexive, but not emotional. So I scan all of you, and I scan for vulnerabilities. I don't do it because I'm evil. Well, I'm evil, but never mind. But I don't do it because I'm evil. I don't do it because I'm evil. I do it because I am. I do it because I am, not because I'm evil. That's what I do. You breathe. I scan. So I scan. I scan all of you. And I scan you for vulnerabilities. I scan you for chinks in the armor. I scan you for cracks, for breaks, for torsion. I scan you for imminent collapse. I scan you for traces of disintegration. I scan you for what is called in information technology, intrusion points. Like a hacker would scan a system wanting to install malware. Yeah? I'm about to install malware in my target. And to install malware, I need to know, do you have a working firewall? Do you have a working firewall? Do you have an antivirus? Do you have anti-malware? Are you talking to Richard Grannan? It's a critical point.
A little signpost. Remember what he says about his attraction to a victim being dependent on whether they're in touch with Richard. You'll hear about his jealousy of Richard and his attempt to get his victims to try and seduce him as a test.
So then I scan all of you, and now I have a map. I have a constructed map. By the way, the map could be of one person or of a collective. So I have a map. By the way, I know the I'm answering the question unasked. Yes, I have a map of you. Of you, specifically. Right now. I have a map of all of you. So I know, I see who is bleeding, who is broken, who is damaged, who is vulnerable. Who is open to attack? Who is open to intrusion? Who is open to takeover? Who is open to mind snatching? Who is open to merging and fusing with me? Who is open to share my fantasy in the sense that she is willing, craving to suspend reality? To suspend reality and go with me into the twilight zone, into the Netherlands of my mind. Because my mind is a very dark and to some extent dangerous place. And it takes a certain type. When I scan for vulnerabilities, I divide the vulnerabilities in two groups. And that's a crucial insight, what I'm about to tell you. I divide the vulnerabilities in two groups. There are those who are vulnerable, but seek healing. Vulnerable, broken, damaged, traumatized, hurt, but they want to heal. Do you have a gun?
It's in my coat.
Oh. It's never there when I need it.
That joke about the gun was due to someone making a noise in the background.
So there are those of you who are vulnerable, broken, damaged, bleeding, hurt, traumatized, but you want to heal. And this is a very crucial insight. There are those of you who are hurting, in pain, bleeding, and you want more. You want more of the same. You want me to destroy you because you hate yourself, because you're self-destructive, because you're self-trashing, because you're self-punitive. I am your instrument of destruction. It's like suicide by Vaknin. So these are two separate groups, and I would reflexively, from the word reflex, I would reflexively use different strategies. If I were to approach those of you who are hurting and want to heal, I would offer you healing. Not because I'm Sam Vaknin in psychology. Had I been a street cleaner, I would still offer you healing. I would say, I'm your medicine. I can cure you. I can heal you. All you have to do is suspend yourself. Become me. Merge with me. Be one with me. And this oneness, this going back to the womb, allow me to be your mother. Come into my womb. It is so safe. It's oceanic. You don't need to face reality anymore. It's challenges. It's hostility. It's dangers. It's risks. I'm your total protection. I'm your immersive environment. I'm your metaverse, you know? So I would offer healing. Those of you who are looking to self-annihilate, self-trash, self-destroy, I would give you what you want. I would help you to disintegrate. I'd help you to die. It's a death process. Freud called it the thanatic process, and later on it was called destrudo. So I would help you with your destrudo. There's libido and destrudo. Yeah? So I would help you with your destrudo. I would help you to self-destruct. I would be your detonating device. There is no greater intimacy than destroying another person. Any serial killer will tell you this. There's no greater intimacy than the process of dying. Mentally, physically. That's the ultimate in intimacy. And the second highest intimacy is the process of healing. Because what you do in healing, you rearrange a person. It's like rearranging, it's like Lego, you know? It also involves destruction. To rebuild, you need to destroy first something. Destroy the illness, destroy the dysfunction, destroy the pain. Everything involves destruction, but some people want to stop at destruction, and some people want to rebuild, resurrect. It's all very religious. Religious, like crucifixion and resurrection. Some people want to be crucified and never resurrected. Some people want to resurrect. The only difference is it takes me longer than 3 days. And my father is not up there.
It's quite chilling hearing that, knowing the background context. But you can hear there's a lot of humour and banter between him and Richard. On the one hand, he's describing what he's already done to victims, destroying them, suicide by Vaknin. But for those who want to heal, he offers healing. He's dangerous, but also the good guy, the savior, the healer. He's using the seminar as a hunting ground. This is his sales pitch, and he includes the truth in it. You sign up for healing but receive the destruction package. Remember in my interview with Mark, he mentioned that he was surprised that Sam had taken a woman to the seminar who was not his wife. Likely she was another patient target. She heard all of that. Her facial expressions indicated a negative response. He was taunting her. Something you'll hear a lot more about. I'll return to the evidence now between Sam and another victim. Parts are her recollections being shared with another victim. Something you will learn, he tried to pit them against each other. A trigger warning, rape is mentioned, which is alleged to have taken place at a hotel in Switzerland, where he met multiple victims.
I've just come across some of the... when it crosses the line. So there's so much parent care and tenderness in the grooming process, but then when the line is crossed and when it's become sexual, and this is not consensual in that it's been coerced and brainwashed, and all of them, you know, if you'd ask them the cold light of day, would you ever sleep with this man? No. That's not being unkind, he's an older man that they wouldn't consider sleeping with or find attractive. And the control, but anyway, this is some accounts here coming in a bit where halfway through a sentence, but and then after, when I was high, drunk, spinning, I was laying in bed and said, I'm curious about what he wanted to do. And then Sam didn't let me sleep for 24 hours, and now sleep deprivation is a form of torture. He put me in the armchair and shouted and shouted. I fell asleep sitting, and he woke me up and said, don't dare to fall asleep, and kept shouting. My God, he's horrible. At least let me sleep. And then it was 5 a.m. and he was like, take a train and leave. And I was like, Sam, please, it's 5 a.m. I'm high, I'm drunk, I'm tired, I'll fall asleep on the street. And he said, fine. So complete disregard. This is from a 20-year-old girl. And this is sleep deprivation torture. It continues. I'm going to break and tame you. This is what I became addicted to. It is like the world's best video game. All true stuff is good. I don't remember your face, and I've had the worst sex ever with you. So this is someone that he's abused, sexually violated, but then he'll insult their performance. But I'm hell-bent on housebreaking and taming you, rendering you my submissive, mindless slave. Nothing that experience cannot fix. You are very horny and open to experimentation. You will make a great fuck one day. So there's the hope there. Like, you're all these terrible things, but I will make you good. Congrats, you have become my new hobby and project. Should turn you on big time. I love you. Wow. Okay, here's more. This is a confession of rape. Your relationship with sex is very unhealthy and conflicted. You're very risky. You can accuse me of raping you. I have money and reputation. I'm a public figure. You're already saying falsely that I forced you to have sex at the Dolder. That is sexual assault. In many countries, this is rape. And it is a lie. You initiated the sex, so I scared you? This is definitely rape. I cannot take this risk. I'm a public figure. He's basically saying, though, that, you know, I'm more important than you. I'm going to be believed. You are not. This is an absolute classic textbook language of an abuser. You will not be believed. I'm dreading reading this bit. I'm seeing the word daddy, and I know that this is one of his MOs about being the father figure. I think it's probably the most disturbing thing that I've heard is, I'll be your father, gently raping you.
It's too graphic and disturbing to read word for word. I'll pick up at the point just after.
Daddy tucks you in, sits on the bedside and sings you a lullaby until you fall asleep. Daddy will protect baby from now on, will not abuse her. Daddy learned his bitter lesson. Daddy is not mad anymore, can't you tell? No, you are going to leave Daddy one day and find a husband. Daddy will never, ever leave you until you do. Daddy wants to spend his last years with you. Ah, this is like, you know, this is not what a father does. It's not what a father figure does. It's not what a man in a position of power and trust does. This is horrible. These are all to the 20-year-old girl. She went for therapy sessions. Now this is a different MO, because with the one victim I've heard the full story, it took a long time. I think it was years before there was the sexual element, but the sexual assault was the first day. With a Coke bottle from a minibar. So, so wrong.
I felt sick after reading page upon page of degrading sexual fantasies. He also boasts to a new victim, who's already brainwashed, about his past discards. In a communication with a woman who works in the field of psychology, he says, "Women who meet me feel like insects, pinned down, dissected, interrogated." In this thread, the woman suggests that perhaps he should have been professional and helped a past patient. He replied, "How could I? I was the cause of her disastrous state of mind," and that he had engineered the whole thing.
Just having a little moment thinking about all of this and taking this on and analysing what it is in me that makes me do this, because this is not something you can do as a job and turn in for the night or have your dinner and, you know, switch off from. It just completely consumes you. And this is really heavy stuff, and this is, you know, how do I handle this without absorbing too much? How do I keep a barrier up to be healthy myself? How do I not become emotionally involved with these victims who I have such an extremely empathetic and compassionate and feeling person, which makes me good at what I do, but it makes me, you know, makes me suffer. And I don't think I've even seen the worst of it yet. I haven't seen the videos. Really kind of don't want to see them before I have to go and meet him in person. I actually said when I first took this on that I didn't want to know too much, because I said, the more, I'm a terrible liar, I need to be as authentic as I can be. And so far I can do that. And I'm not going into this blindly. I'm going into it knowing what this might do to me. And I'm going to disappear again from my life and from people, and I just get really, but you know, once I'm in, you just go, what they say, when you're going through hell, just keep going, and that's what I'm going to have to do. So I'm kind of at the gathering momentum stage right now. This is firing my fight, but there'll definitely be a point where I get in. It's deep, but in a good way. I'm going for the goal first, the big one, and then it's the afterwards. It's when I have to speak to all the women. It's going to be really, really hard. That's going to be the difficult bit, is hearing their story being shared with me, and them absolutely trusting me with this precious valuable, painful thing. It is a thing. It's like a separate thing. I can't find the words because I'm too tired, but they're pulling out the most wounded part of themselves. The bit they don't want anyone to know about or hear about or see or view, they view as damage and something to be ashamed of, and they are ripping it out and they're handing it to me. Take my story. Do some good with this. I take that very seriously. Very seriously. And I will treat them with the care and the love and the grace that they deserved all along. But we have to stop this man. And others like him, because he's not the only one. He's not so special. He's just a bad, bad man.
I hope that very late night and exhausted ramble isn't viewed as being self-indulgent. Mark had asked me to record myself and my reactions because no one ever witnesses this part of my work, and I want you, the listeners, to experience this journey with me. I don't for a second feel my reading and learning about the abuse, or you listening now, has even a fraction of the impact that it had on the victims experiencing it. But it is hard to look upon. Later in the series, you'll hear from actor and activist Evan Rachel Wood, who told a Congress hearing, "If you can't hear the whole truth, then you will never know true empathy. And if we have to live through it, then you should have to hear it." In this story, there is a lot more to hear. With the majority of the evidence now gone through, the next step was to lock in my interview with Sam. Little did he know that Mark Vicente and Scott Altamori were en route to Scotland to meet me, and not everything went smoothly.
We do it my way or not at all. Wow, okay, this has turned nasty.
A last-minute demand almost sabotaged the shoot.
I'm concerned about the confrontation happening in that space.
Travel chaos adds to the pre-interview stress.
We don't know if we're going to get on the plane or not. I'm just praying this isn't a wasted journey. There's so much riding on this. There's so much pressure on me.
The storyteller Narcissus Playbook is written, produced and edited by me, Isla Traquair, and it's the fourth in the Storyteller series. This is an independent production, and I rely on you, the listeners, to help spread the word by showing your support. It doesn't cost anything, just a few clicks to like, share, subscribe and review. And soon there'll be extra content available on my Patreon for the price of a cup of coffee, including analysis, evidence, regular videos and more. Thank you for listening. If you've been affected by narcissistic abuse, there are links for support in the show notes.